From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. We are talking all about the La Crosse School District today with Superintendent Aaron Engel, who has been on this program several times before. First of all, before we set the table, Dr. Engel, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
One of the things that we're talking about, we'll talk about an interesting program that you're working with now called Leadership SDLC, which is Leadership School District of La Crosse, and kind of the cohort that's going through that and what prompted that model. That'll be later in our conversation. But right now, a committee of people, members of the public, members of the school district and others, has just concluded a period of work evaluating all of the facilities that the La Crosse School District has and making some recommendations about the district's future. So tell me, it's called the Facilities Advisory Committee. Just in broad strokes, what was the charge to that group of people?
Yeah, so we put together a community-based group that we've called the Facility Advisory Committee, and their charge was a few key things. First, it was to review demographic data, enrollment projections, facility assessments, best practices, and other factors that impact our school district facilities. It was to integrate community feedback from surveys and other means into the evaluations and recommendations, to serve as key communicators in our La Crosse community. And the two big things were explore, evaluate, and refine potential elementary school arrangements and facility consolidation options. And second, explore, evaluate, and refine middle and high school facility improvements that result in comparable opportunities for students.
Okay, and this committee was made up of how many people?
It was a group of 21 individuals. So we started by putting the group together by thinking about the various demographics here in La Crosse, thinking about representation, folks who could serve as key communicators who were connected to others in various ways. We sent out a list of about 40 invitations to folks. 25 people indicated that they would be willing to serve, and 21 were able to make it regularly.
Okay. And from I would guess a cross section of disciplines and experiences, what kind of input were you looking for from those members?
Yeah, we were looking for various perspectives from different roles in our community, representation from different portions of our community, different demographics from across our community. We were hoping for a representative group.
Okay. How did that idea come up, the idea behind having a facilities advisory committee?
Yeah, so it's a long journey to get to this point. And it started, as most of our conversations have, with our three big challenges that we have in the school district, something that we've identified 3 years ago at this point. We've had declining enrollment for 30 years in the school district of La Crosse, which has in recent years led to deficit budgets. And those deficit budgets have caused us to make challenging choices from time to time. And we also have aging buildings. So those are the three big challenges that we've been grappling with. About 2 years ago, we embarked on a journey to identify the first strategy to present to our community, which was ultimately the November 2023 referendum to consolidate into one high school. Get to that proposal to our community, that referendum, we used focus groups across, I think, 16 or 18 focus groups from various elements of our community. It was done kind of in the middle of the pandemic, so there were some limitations on how we gathered and got together. And then we also used surveys to assess more broadly all 62,000 residents in our school district. The information that we received from those inputs led us to the one high school idea that the board put on as a referendum in November of 2023. And our community soundly rejected it. They voted 70% against that measure. And so while our initial information had led us to believe that this could be something our community would choose, they did not. And in reflecting on that process and talking to people throughout it, what we heard was our community wanted more community involvement in the direction of our facilities. They felt like that might be a better way to arrive at choices or decisions that our community could support. There was a second facilities decision that we made in February of this year, and that was to close Lincoln Middle School. Once again, addressing those challenges of declining enrollment, deficit budgets, and aging buildings, we knew that with declining middle school enrollment, we didn't necessarily need three middle schools any longer. And the one that was the oldest and had the most maintenance needs was Lincoln Middle School. The school board met in workshops over a number of months to evaluate options, to consider different strategies, and ultimately decided in February of 2023 to close Lincoln Middle School. And we were able to consolidate into Logan Middle School and Longfellow Middle School. There's been, you know, relatively little public pushback on that decision. Mm-hmm. But something that we did hear from folks was they wish there was a little more transparency, a little more notification leading up to that decision.
Okay.
So that they could be aware. So between the the November referendum in 2022, I guess, and the decision to close Lincoln Middle School, we heard we want more community input on facilities through direct voice, and we want more transparency and notification of the process. And so that led us to exploring different options that might be available in the state.
Looking back at that that process in November, before our conversation began, you and I were just informally talking about that, and you talked about the legwork that went into that that the public might not have been aware of. That was like a year and a half long process. And so from the public perspective, a lot of people, fairly or unfairly, might have felt like that process went really quickly, when in fact there was a lot of legwork that went into the research about it. What did you learn from having three out of four people say, no, this isn't the option that we're comfortable with right now? Do you think that was like an incorrect read on what kind of policy was acceptable, or do you think there was a communication breakdown, or is it simply that aspect of you know, if more people from the community had buy-in earlier, that the result might have been different?
Yeah, I think there's probably two big factors. One is we probably underestimated, you know, how much people really loved the school that they have. We shouldn't do that. In fact, it's a sign that we've done a really good job as a school district if people love their school. And so there's a lot of nostalgia for folks' school, a lot of desire to keep a school and a building that really worked for them and served them well, and a desire to keep an asset and an amenity in their neighborhood. And so I think that was a factor, you know, that desire for the status quo. But ultimately, I think with any change effort, you know, if something doesn't pass or it fails, it's a failure to communicate a vision for the future that is better than the present. And, you know, I think about that frequently. You know, like, what was it that we could have done to demonstrate to our community that this opportunity for one high school would be better than our current situation? And, you know, whether it was, you know, statistics or emotional arguments or pictures, at the end of the day, we failed to make that case to the community, and they voted not to head down that path.
And so that was then. This is now. The fact remains, though, that as you mentioned, a long trend of declining enrollment in the La Crosse School District, leading to budget deficits, deferred maintenance, all these other things. What's the main driving force behind the work that the Facilities Advisory Committee has just completed, and the work that the school board and others now take up to determine what the future is for elementary, particularly elementary schools in this phase of the discussion in La Crosse?
the declining enrollment continues to be a factor, and at a certain point, it starts to impact our ability to educate our kids. You know, any given elementary school, you know, there's a range of a number of students that are ideal. Our ideal elementary school would be about 350 to 400 students, and our average right now is just over 300 across the district. You know, so we're lower than we would like to be, and it starts to have impacts on the quality of education that we can afford and how efficiently we can operate, and so there's a cost to that. The decline in enrollment at the elementary level alone over the last 8 years has been 719 kids, so a pretty significant drop in enrollment in just 8 years.
What kind of percentage is that?
Out of, it's probably close to 25%.
Okay.
Of the total elementary enrollment from just 8 years ago. These trends are not just local, they're statewide, they're national. If you look at birth rates across the state, it's pretty consistently declining.
Mm-hmm. I know that I promise the whole conversation is not going to be about November, but November of last year, one of the people advocating for the referendum was talking about how many students there were at Logan High School in the 90s versus how many students are at Logan High School now. It's a significantly lower number. And is that true across the board in La Crosse schools, where like people fondly remember their school as being, you know, whether it's the elementary school, middle school, high school, as being like teeming with students and teachers and activities and all these kinds of things, and that just now the halls are just emptier than they used to be?
Yeah, that's true across our schools. You know, I think in the mid-90s, Logan High School was at over 1,300 students, and today it's around 750. Central High School at one point had over 1,600 kids, I think in the late 80s, and now it's under 1,000. You know, so just drastically different student enrollments than we have had historically. You know, from 1990 until 2020, the population of La Crosse has remained approximately the same, you know, maybe 1% growth in 30 years. And if birth rates are lower, then that means in the same population of people, there's fewer kids.
This isn't necessarily, or maybe it is, is this an issue of students that would otherwise be going to La Crosse Public Schools going elsewhere, like private schools, parochial schools, that sort of thing? Or is this simply there aren't as many kids as a percentage of our population in our community?
Yeah, there simply aren't as many kids as there used to be. When we look at private school enrollments in the school district of La Crosse, you know, since 1994, I think is the earliest we have private school data. Since 1994, public school enrollment has declined by about 29%. Private school enrollment has declined by 46%. You know, so there's just fewer kids all around. And the share of students that are attending private schools has actually gone down over that same period of time by 4%. You know, so more students by percentage are attending public schools than are attending private schools. You know, so we're not losing students to that. You know, people point to Holman and Onalaska as places where development has occurred over the last 30 years, and they have certainly seen a rise in the number of students attending those schools. But in the last 4 years, you know, those school districts have also experienced declining enrollment somewhere between 2% and 4% over a 4 to 5 year period. You know, so we're not alone in the area, not alone in the state. You know, this is a nationwide trend.
Okay. Dr. Aaron Engel is our guest today on Newsmakers, and we're talking about plans as they go forward in the La Crosse School District, what that district is doing to counter a trend of declining enrollment and aging school facilities, and the work particularly of a facility advisory committee that has just made some recommendations that we're going to talk about. You might wonder where the sort of quote unquote dissenting voice is in this conversation. Well, that is you, and there are a couple of opportunities for public input that we're going to talk about later in the show. There in late November, there will be two opportunities for the public to be heard by the school district on their thoughts on this whole idea of what to do about the facilities that the La Crosse School District has, what facilities they keep open, what facilities they invest more in, and what your ideas might be regarding that. So stay tuned for those details. Dr. Engel, as the committee has gone about its work, what were some of the key learnings that the committee discovered in their research as they gathered the data that was available to them regarding current or future enrollment or you know the condition of the current facilities and other things that might have gone into what they decided to recommend?
Yeah, the Facility Advisory Committee had access to any information that they wanted, and we provided a lot of information to them. As we put together the Facility Advisory Committee, we used kind of examples from other school districts across the state who had used a similar process, places like Sun Prairie, West Allis, West Milwaukee, Oshkosh, Appleton, Green Bay, Wausau. And one of the things we did after talking to Oshkosh in particular was we hired an independent third-party facilitator to kind of navigate the meetings, to host them, you know, to kind of make it as much about that committee's work as possible as opposed to, you know, direction from administration. And so we really provided information as information getters. They asked for stuff and we provided it. We know they want some baseline information, you know, so we provided information around the age and condition of our facilities, sites, attendance, demographics, you know, financial and budgeting pieces, instructional components, you know, anything that they might have. We had a running frequently asked questions document that answered a whole host of other things that were tangential or directly related, whatever it might be. And so we provided all of that information to the committee, and all of that information is up on our website as well for anyone who might want to look at it as well.
Yeah, I was impressed with the amount of data that's available on that website. Just the questions document that you mentioned, but also all of the other proceedings are basically versions of it are recorded, at least written records of those things online for people to look at and find all that information for themselves. You can see the ideas that other people have already presented. You can see like sort of written back and forth between why this decision will work, won't work, et cetera. So it's really interesting. Where do people go to find that? What's the district's website where they can find that information?
Yeah, our school district website would be www.lacrossesd.org, I believe. I can verify that. But the school district's website has every piece of information you could possibly want to investigate. We wanted to maintain transparency as much as possible in this process, so we recorded the meetings and have those posted. We have all the presentations there. Every handout that was provided, you know, is linked there as well. And so it's a relatively comprehensive website.
Ask and you shall receive. The website is lacrosseschools.org.
There we go, lacrosseschools.org.
You got a lot on your mind.
Yes. Yeah, so the process was a long one, too. It was held over 8 months with 8 2.5-hour meetings, and the committee you know, took on its tasks willingly and with thoughtful deliberation. I should probably start from the beginning by thanking these incredible volunteers who stood up, took the time, waded through the information, did their best to help provide thoughtful responses to really challenging issues. And so I'm incredibly thankful to the group that took on that task. Relatively quickly on the elementary consolidation option, though, they arrived at two schools as maybe being the best option for consolidation at the elementary level. You know, we presented the effects of closing zero schools, one school, two, three. And as they evaluated the financial and instructional considerations of that, they landed on a two-school solution relatively quickly. And their votes, their conversation, their table feedback, that guided all of the work and where they went next. Their requests, you know, sometimes they said, slow down, we're not ready to move forward. Other times they said, hey, we're ready to tackle this and we'd like another shot at it. After the two-school solution kind of started to arise, what I also witnessed as they worked was a preference for a north and a south pairing. You know, our community is long and narrow, you know, north to south. And so there's a general grouping of northern schools and southern schools, and it aligns with our middle and high school pathways as well. And from their perspective, it seemed that if we closed a northern school, it would kind of even out enrollments on the north side of town. And if we closed a southern school, it would even out enrollments on the south side of town. It seemed pretty logical as they looked through it. And then as they looked through the elementary profiles and considered all the different factors that kind of comprise our buildings, locations, demographics, four buildings really started to come to the fore as they were working through that information. And the two on the north side that seemed to come up most frequently were Northwoods International Elementary School and Emerson Elementary School. And then on the south side, it was Hinchin Elementary School and Spence Elementary School.
Okay. And we'll talk more about how that process sort of winnowed its way through and came to an ultimate recommendation as our program continues with Dr. Aaron Engel today. If you'd like to reach out to our show, we'd love to hear from you anytime through the week. We tape the shows a few days ahead of its airing, and so your comments wouldn't get on today's show per se, but I'd love to hear from you. If there are ideas for future shows or a way that we can follow up on this issue, we'd love to hear from you. Newsmakers at WPR.org is the email address. It's newsmakers at WPR.org, and our conversation with Aaron Engel continues in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thanks for joining us. We're having an interesting conversation today about the La Crosse School District and its future. Dr. Aaron Engel is our guest. He's the superintendent of La Crosse Schools. Dr. Engel, we kind of left a little bit of a cliffhanger. You were talking about a couple of schools to the south, a couple of schools to the north that were presented as options for elementary school consolidation. Ultimately, there was a recommendation made by the committee, and the district will be able to review it, and the school board still has a decision to make, public input still to seek, and all those kinds of things. But what was the ultimate recommendation of the committee?
Yeah, the ultimate recommendation of the committee was to close Northwoods International Elementary School and to close Hinchin Elementary School. They also made some additional recommendations, you know, to further explore secondary boundary or secondary options, to, you know, look more closely at elementary boundary options if those buildings are closed, and to make some other considerations. Generally, though, they also framed their recommendation inside of a desire to see the school district, you know, repair and rejuvenate its schools, to invest in its infrastructure, which I thought was an interesting perspective from this group. You know, they worked long and hard, and one of the things that they continually came back to is, you know, we do have these aging buildings. Part of that solution is repairing them or investing in new buildings along the way. And, you know, for those looking in from the outside, it may seem like a contradiction. Why would you close something, you know, and then build something new? But I think the committee really wanted to see the school district flourish and to be prepared for the next 100 years of education. And so the decision to close was also in the context of trying to improve our buildings and have the resources necessary to do that as we move forward.
I think of Emerson. You were talking about that, and that's a few blocks from where I live, which is why it stands out in my mind. My dad went to school there in the late 50s. I mean, these are not new facilities we're talking about. And yet one of the schools that is on the recommended to close list is what's the name of the school?
It's Northwoods
out on County B, which is newer than some of the other schools. It's interesting to see that school on the list versus some of the older buildings. What went into that decision, do you think?
Yeah, so the Facility Advisory Committee identified seven different parameters that they were using to consider kind of the full range of factors that might go into a decision. So it wasn't simply about how much deferred maintenance a building had. It wasn't simply about location. It wasn't simply about busing or the types of programs that were present. What they were looking for to help guide their decisions, and each person approached it differently, of course, but was things that would differentiate buildings, what made them different than others. And so there was a community survey that went out to highlight and gather some information around what the community might see as priorities around facilities. We have some policies for the school district that guide facility development, and so the committee took some of those factors and used those to guide their decisions around those buildings. Northwoods International School is only about 30 years old. But it happens to also be out on Highway B and on the edge of our school district, and only about 61 students live within 2 miles of that school, whereas a school like Emerson or Spence has over 1,300 students that live within 2 miles of it. And so those are the complex factors that the committee was trying to take in and synthesize to help make their recommendations.
When people hear about something like the possible closure of something like the Northwoods International School, would that be a decision on the part of the school district not to have an international baccalaureate school or whatever other type of program might be offered at another school that closes? Or does that simply mean that program would move to another facility?
Yeah, that was a question that came up quickly. We know that our international baccalaureate program is well-liked by the families and students that attend there. Our teachers find it a useful and a successful strategy for meeting kids' needs. And we've invested a lot of time and money into it, And so that is a program that we intend to keep going. And if Northwoods were closed, if the school board voted to do so, we would continue that program in another location. And, as a part of the FAQs, we explored some options for what that could look like.
We were talking earlier about public input, a couple of opportunities upcoming for the public to weigh in. I want to hear more about that, but first, what are the basic details about those opportunities, the when and where and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we're incredibly thankful for the Facility Advisory Committee's work and the recommendation that they're providing. It is ultimately a recommendation to the school board. The school board has the final authority for any sort of school closures, and this great work that the committee has done will help inform their strategy and choices as they move forward. We also know that folks have a lot of desire to comment on this report. There's a lot of emotion around potential building closures. And so we wanted to provide some dedicated opportunities for folks to weigh in so that we could collect all that information in one spot. On November 27th and 29th, there are opportunities for public comment on the FAC's recommendation report. The 27th is a virtual option for folks who prefer that, and the 29th is in person at Hogan Administrative Center. We'll be using the same rules that the school board uses for public comment at the start of its meetings, so limited to 5 minutes and a need to notify the district in advance to get on the list.
So the 27th is Monday, and the 29th is a Wednesday. It's not the week of Thanksgiving, but the week after Thanksgiving. So, just to set people's expectations, if they haven't had an opportunity to either view or attend a school board meeting, or I know a lot of city councils do it the same way, sort of thing for public comment, this is an opportunity to come. Sign up in advance. That's clear, and I'll ask you for information on how to do that. But prepare your comments, your remarks, and then you have a period of time to deliver those comments. And it's not a conversation. It's not a back and forth. It's not an opportunity for people to, for instance, ask a question of the school board and get an answer. This is strictly public input. Is there a reason that that's the preferable mode of gathering this, whereas some people would really want an opportunity to have some of their concerns addressed?
Yeah, this is a public opportunity. We want to be efficient with our time. You know, we want to give as many people an opportunity to speak. We intend to fit in as many people as we can in 3 hours each night. There are other opportunities to engage in dialogue with our school board members, and those include email, phone calls, you know, setting up meetings with folks. You know, there are other opportunities to do this, that kind of dialogue. This is intended to be one-way communication, much like at our public comment opportunities at school board meetings.
Are there types of input that the board is particularly interested in hearing?
I think the board is interested in anything that folks want to share, you know, is welcome. Generally speaking, I know the board appreciates an opportunity to digest information. You know, it's hard to capture it all and listen to everything in the moment. You know, if folks are able to print off their comments and share those with the board, that is always helpful. And I know the board reads their emails and responds to folks, you know, when they have an opportunity there also. And so I think there's lots of different ways to communicate with the board. You know, some folks are more eloquent speaking and some are better written, you know, and so I ask people to consider how they can best communicate so that the board gets their perspective.
You specifically mentioned the importance of advance notice of intention to comment. So how do people let the board know that they want to either how do they get information about how to attend the online session, and then for the in-person session or for each one, how do they notify the board that they intend to speak?
Yeah, they'd reach out to the School District of La Crosse district office. The person to talk to there would be Laura Steigerwald, and our phone number there is 608-789-7628. So just call the school district office. We'll get you on the list. You know, we'll have 3 hours to get through folks at about 5 minutes apiece. And so we hope that we can get through everyone that signs up.
And people have been fishing through their consoles for a napkin and a pen. And so in, you know, 5 or 10 seconds, we're going to give that phone number again, which is?
It is 608-789-7628, and ask for Laura Steigerwald and to speak on the November 27th or November 29th public comments for the Facility Advisory Committee's recommendation.
Wonderful. Our guest today is Dr. Aaron Engel. We're talking about recommendations from the Facilities Advisory Committee. But as Dr. Engel pointed out, really this is the work of that committee was important, but the school board itself will be considering those recommendations and will be soliciting public comment and making a decision about a lot of things regarding the future of La Crosse schools, but especially how and whether to do some consolidation on the elementary school level. In some of your remarks in the past, talking about the financial pressure on the district right now, and the age of the facilities and the makeup of the makeup and size of the student body, you have alluded to the fact that even though the one school option was not necessarily chosen by the public, that in the future there could be a time where consolidation on the middle or high school level kind of might have to happen anyway. What's your current thought process on an idea like that?
Yeah, further consolidation at the middle or high school level can really only occur with public support, whether that's through electing school board members or referenda for new buildings. And so that's something we'll be continuing to monitor, you know, like where does public support sit for those sorts of concepts? You know, if we have to consolidate within the buildings that we have, you know, we know what the capacities of those buildings are. And if we hit enrollments that are within those capacities at one building, you know, somewhere around 1,500, then we could consider it further. You know, I think there's advantages to having smaller high schools. You know, we know that it may lead to more participation in athletics, more opportunities for more of a family feel in some cases. But there are also drawbacks when you get too small. We might not be able to offer as many AP courses or dual credit credit options or as many electives. And so I think it's a balance between all of those factors. You know, at what size do the opportunities for students start to be limited? And so I think that's something we'll be paying attention to as well. And so I think it'll be a combination of factors. It'll be a moving target over time. We'll be working with our community and getting a sense for what they want, and also, you know, being transparent about the impacts on our students as our population continues to shrink.
Public input late in November. When do you anticipate there being actual action taken on this issue?
Yeah, so with the public comment in November and the Facility Advisory Committee's recommendation, we'll be putting together a long-range facility plan that we'll present to the school board in early January. And so all of this comment is incredibly valuable as we get a better sense for you know, what's possible in our community and different strategies to meet the goals that we have. That report will be, that long-range facility plan will be presented to the school board in January, and then they'll have an opportunity to take that up. By then, we should have a better sense of what our kind of midterm fiscal picture looks like. You know, this time last year, we hadn't passed a referendum for operations. We didn't have a state budget that provided new dollars for the first time in 3 years to public education. And so we're in a slightly different fiscal position than we were historically. And so we need to make real good sense of that, ensure that the school board has access to that information, some long-range projections on enrollments and some other things. So I think incorporating all of those pieces together, the school board should have a pretty good sense of where we're going to be at for next year and in the short term, and can really assess which strategy to pursue, you know, and if it's you know, what elements of the Facility Advisory Committee's report, you know, they think they need to take advantage of now, what elements they might be able to wait a little bit on, or depending on public comment and other things, how to proceed in a third path that we're unaware of at this time.
That the public will certainly let you know about.
Absolutely. No, our public has proven continually that they speak up on issues that are important to them. And if we listen well, hopefully we can identify strategies that meet our community's needs.
I know a lot of people, these are, as you mentioned, really emotional issues for a lot of people. And when you're speaking about an emotional issue, you often just can't help but engage in that. And so it can be really... can create some tense moments. Have you found people to be relatively willing to listen, relatively, or in their expression, like you know, even-handed, or has this been a productive interaction with the public writ large?
Yeah, most of my interactions with folks, I mean, 95-98%, you know, people are thoughtful and reasonable, and even if they're emotional, you know, they recognize that and you know, identify their own biases, you know. So I found people to be, you know, relatively great in terms of like thinking about it, and for those that have, you know, been able to take a step back and like think about the problems more broadly, they recognize these are really difficult things, and mm-hmm. Yeah, like nobody wants to close anybody's school. We would all prefer to keep what we've had and make it better as opposed to closing anything. And I think everybody most everybody I've talked to recognizes that as well. In my conversations with, you know, families, teachers, community members, you know, sometimes, you know, it gets to a us versus them, you know, sort of narrative, but it's rare. Most people just want to celebrate their school and be sure that folks understand how amazing it was for their kids in their neighborhood. And they just want what's best, you know, from their perspective. And I totally appreciate all of that commentary. Sometimes it gets a little heated, you know, because it is an emotional issue. But if you're going to wade in these waters, then you have to expect that kind of a response. And so I haven't encountered anything that's out of line by any means. But, you know, people can get a little bit heated from time to time.
Fair enough. Dr. Aaron Engel is our guest today on Newsmakers. Coming up, we're going to talk about an interesting new program called Leadership SDLC. Find out what that is and how you can learn more about it coming up on Newsmakers. If you'd like to hear our conversation again, or if there's a previous episode of Newsmakers you wanted to check out, you can find them all on our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. We're back in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Here also is Dr. Aaron Engel, the superintendent of La Crosse Schools. And we are talking now, pivoting our conversation to a program that's just begun several weeks ago called Leadership SDLC. Dr. Engel, tell me what Leadership is SDLC. Where'd you come up with that idea?
Yeah, we were fortunate to hear about a similar program in the Howard Suamico School District, where they had brought together some thought leaders in their community to create a deeper understanding of public education and to create a cohort of, advocates for public education. At a time when, trust in government has been eroded a little bit, and when we have a need to engage more closely with our community, we thought that the work that they had done over in Howard Suamico was great and was something that we wanted to replicate here. And so we put together our own group, Leadership SDLC, School District of La Crosse, and brought together a group of thought leaders to meet once a month over the course of the school year, and to take a deep dive into the elements of public education that sometimes people don't get a chance to see.
So this is really the cohort that you've assembled is of sort of area leaders of various stripes. However, it's almost an educational program for them. In a way, what kinds of things are they going to be learning?
Yeah, we're looking at all elements of our school district. We started with school community relations and engagement, how we conduct public relations. We just wrapped up another session on this district and state budget and funding and how that works. It's a complicated topic, and so any more information I think helps people there. In upcoming meetings, we'll be looking at school leadership, classroom instruction and assessment, digital learning and technology, student services, special education, and a number of other things to help give our folks that are attending a broader understanding of how public education works.
I've seen programs like this offered on a municipal level in some locations, on a state level in other applications. Some people have had successful versions of a program like this going for years and years and years with a different cohort of people every single year. Is this something that you are hoping to continue after this year in the district? What does success look like from this program?
Yeah, we're hopeful to continue this annually for the foreseeable future. If we can bring together 20 to 25 folks every year to create a deeper understanding about public education, and the hope is that when issues arise, it's a group of folks to call on, who might have a little bit better understanding, and not just by the school district, but by community members. A neighbor or a friend of theirs might know that they're somebody who has a little more information, and they can go to them and say, like, hey, I heard about this special education thing. Like, can you tell me what's going on with that? And if they have a little more information, that'll be helpful. And public education needs a lot of support in the community as well. We serve our community, and it's reciprocal. And if our community supports public education through a program like this, we know that we'll be more successful as well.
Some of the programming of Leadership SDLC is based on a book called Schools Cannot Do It Alone by Jamie Vollmer. Tell me about that book. What is it about the content of that book that is helpful for you as a leader to communicate to others interested in working with the district?
Yeah, there's a couple of elements of the book that I really like a lot. One is that it's a transformation story. It's about a businessman that gets involved in public education, gets involved in leadership in it in the state of Iowa. And as he works in schools a little bit, as he dives in a little deeper, as he's talking to teachers, his initial view was that you need to run schools like a business. And he quickly learns that you can't run schools like a business. And it's from his perspective as a businessman who had a very successful ice cream company. And if you get a chance to look up the Blueberry Story, it's a great tale of his transformational journey. I think that resonates with folks, you know, his personal experience in being a very successful businessman and then getting into schools and seeing that some of his previously held thoughts and assumptions weren't true. And then he talks about how to support public education. And, you know, he used to think it was about accountability and top-down initiatives and, you know, testing. And what he found was we need to have a great conversation. We need to involve our community. We need to provide support. And it needs to look differently than it does, than he historically thought it should based on his assumptions.
Now, a lot of people hear you say something like you can't run a school district like you run a business. And the assumption on the part of some might be, well, that's going to be an excuse to handle the public's money irresponsibly. Because I think that's what some people mean by run it like a business. What do you mean when you say you can't run a public school district like a business?
On the finance side, you know, we certainly do run many elements of our school district like a business. And, you know, our standards for accountability to our public are far higher than a company in our area. We have audits that are public. You know, we have financial documents that are transparent. And so I think on the business side, like, we actually do run it like a business, and it's done very well. The difference between public schools and a company in our community that might produce a product is that our students aren't widgets. You know, they're not products in the same way. You know, if I'm, you know, manufacturing ice cream like Jamie Vollmer was in his book, he could take the bad blueberries and reject them and get better ones. He could make sure that he had the best ingredients that came into his school or into his business. And we accept all students regardless of their backgrounds, regardless of their experiences, no matter what.
And as well, you should. And also, you're required to. Like, there's no circumstance under which you can take a student who qualifies to attend public school and say, I'm sorry, there's just not an option for you here.
Absolutely. It's an obligation, and we're honored to do it. We find that's one of the greatest things about public education is that we are there for every student no matter what. Businesses, if you get a bad product, bad steel, bad blueberries, whatever it might be, you can reject that and return it and get the better stuff so that you can make the best final product. And so that's one of the key differences, you know, between our business and others. And we also don't have control over our revenues. You know, we're dictated by a third party, you know, and there isn't like a way for schools to make money, so to speak. And I know it's frustrating for some, depending on your politics, but, you know, schools are designed to lose money, right? Like, we're designed to invest in kids, and the return doesn't come on an annual basis in terms of profit margin or something, share price. Our return is educated students in our community able to add to our workforce, add to our democracy, to add to our community. And so it's a longer term investment. I think it has paid off handsomely in our country. We're the envy of the world in many, many ways. And public education is the root of a lot of that.
It's a very interesting conversation we've been having today. Our time is just about up. Dr. Aaron Engel is our guest, who is the superintendent of La Crosse School District. I want to ask you before, we've been talking about this leadership SDLC and the small, relatively small cohort of people who are going through this intensive program. Obviously, parents are regularly involved in the school in various ways, but there are a whole lot of other members of the public, either just interested citizens or grandparents who maybe don't have kids specifically in the school district anymore, or others who might be interested in playing a positive role in the school district. What's the most valuable thing that people listening to our conversation can do today to support students in La Crosse?
supporting public education comes in a variety of ways. You know, it certainly happens at the ballot box, depending on your viewpoints, you know, and so that can happen, you know, whether it's elections and thinking about, you know, which politicians support your views on public education and voting in that way. It could involve volunteering in your schools. That is something that we're always looking for help with. For younger people, it could be choosing a career in public education. It's not for everyone, but it's valuable, good work that is rewarding on a daily basis and frankly pays pretty well and good benefits. You know, so there's lots of reasons to go into education. Other ways folks can support is by, you know, having positive conversations with folks, you know, reflecting back on your own positive experiences and how public education helped you and, you know, conveying that to others as you talk to them. You know, support for public education comes in lots of different ways. And I hope that in the future, if we have referenda for operational needs or for capital projects, that we've made the case that folks can support us at the ballot box too.
Dr. Aaron Engel, superintendent for La Crosse School District, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on.
There are a couple of chances for you to hear Newsmakers every week. We're on Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We're on Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, as I mentioned before, we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. Join us next week for another Newsmakers. If you'd like to get in touch with us between now and then, our email address is newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. I'm Ezra Wall. See you next time here on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.